Chapter 66 Shinri 12 Shinri sat quietly on her stone bench, knees pulled up against her chest in a very unladylike position, watching as the shard-bearer Merrin repeatedly summoned and dismissed his blade. He appeared fascinated by the process. Merrin held out his hand. The milky smoke gathered in his palm, then it lengthened, vaguely outlining the shape of his shard blade. The smoke then coalesced, transforming into the silvery shard blade. Merrin stared at it with a thoughtful expression, then dismissed it, his eyes trailing the smoke as it rose toward the sky. It happened the exact same way it had the last 10 set times, yet he regarded it with wonder. He was still just a boy, despite his manly girth. Yet he was a boy who had slain 3 shard bearers in a period of just a few months. 2 of those times he hadn't even owned a blade himself. In fact, he had defeated the final one with his hands manacled together and his body weakened from extended captivity. He was also a boy who had been brave enough to fight for his freedom, but heartless enough to kidnap the very woman who had helped him escape. He was a boy who had accidentally killed the man Shinri was to have married, a boy who had saved King Elokar's life on 2 separate occasions. He was both a fool and a hero. Merrin summoned and dismissed his blade again, ignorant of Shinri's judgments. Renarin's bench sat up against the southern wall, to Shinri's right. Like Merrin and Shinri, he had been allowed to retain his possessions, and he held his onyx chip between 2 fingers, caressing it with an almost motherly touch. There was a strangely patient air about him. In Shinri's opinion, he was far too unconcerned about their captivity. So far, he hadn't begun any more of his strange number patterns, but he kept glancing at the wall longingly. If he remained a captive much longer, Shinri didn't doubt that he would begin scratching at the wall like he had in the other cell. Shinri wasn't certain what to make of their current accommodations. They sat in the same 3-room chamber that the guards had ushered them into several days before, just after their escape from Ral Aram. They had not been treated poorly, yet neither had they been given permission to leave their rooms. Nanna, the capital of Lachenran, sat against a series of seaside cliffs, and Shinri's prison had been built near the top of one of the inclines. The main room bore a large window on one side, granting a view of the city and its harbors, with the ocean spreading out beyond. Nanna was a city of domes and spires. The Lachenran had always been an artistically inclined people. The rooms were sparsely furnished, but Shinri and the others had been given every requested amenity. Merrin's blade had not been removed from him, and while their captors had given them nothing in the way of audiences or information, they had been treated with respect. Despite Shinri's fears, no Vaden soldiers had come for them. The guards at their chamber doors wore Lachenran light blue, though the white Vaden crests that marked their shoulders bespoke the true rulers of this nation. What did it mean? Surely the Vaden soldiers had come through the Lachenran Oath Gate looking for Shinri and the others. While the Vadens probably assumed that their captives had escaped to Kolinar, they would have been fools not to check through friendly Oath Gates just to be certain. Shinri shook her head. She wasn't certain why they hadn't been taken back to Vaden City yet. But Merrin and Renarin's choice to travel to Lachenran was pure insanity, and bringing Shinri through against her will. Merrin summoned and dismissed the blade. Shinri kept her anger contained, contenting herself by giving the boy an icy glare that he could not see. Renarin had been the one to pull her through, but Merrin had drawn his blade against her. Though they were both at fault, it was difficult to maintain any measure of proper anger with Renarin. He was just too unassuming to be provoking. Merrin, however, everything about him was infuriating. It wasn't just his common blood, either. Shinri half wished she were petty enough to let that provide her a reason for disliking him. No, she knew her emotions came from something deeper, and something a bit more shameful. She was jealous. Marin had only been a lord for 3 months, yet he already seemed more comfortable in his place than Shinri did. He spoke to Renarin as an equal, even as a superior. Back in Alethkar, on the few times she had interacted with Marin, he had seemed uncannily comfortable with Arador and the others. Marin didn't seem to have the same worries and concerns that she did. He didn't seem to feel the same sense of internal falseness, the same conflict between loathing the nobility and wishing to emulate them. Who was he to slay shard-bearers and so easily take his place among kings? Who was he to be so comfortable when Shinri felt anxious? The injustice of it all was frustrating. Marin summoned and dismissed his blade again, and Shinri couldn't hold her tongue. "Is that really necessary?" Shinri snapped. "I believe you've quite firmly established that if you call, the blade will come." Marin looked up with surprise, then flushed. "I'm sorry," he said. "It just seems to help me think." He seemed so harmless. Shinri read him, gauging his personality, trying to look past her biases. He was an earnest man. It was easy to tell from his treatment of others that he cared what they thought of him and considered their evaluations to be more truthful than his own. He wanted to be trusted, and he wanted to do what was right, or at least what others told him was right. He didn't like small spaces. He constantly paced and insisted that the window remain open at all times, except during high storms. He didn't know how to talk to women. Shinri's study of him obviously made him nervous. Harmless indeed. But what was it Renarin said about him? A windrunner? That was, of course, ridiculous. Windrunners were things of legend. They were one of the 10 Apellian knighthoods, sects of mystical epic warriors who had supposedly been founded to keep peace in Roshar and fight the Storm Shades. Marin was a fine duelist, especially considering his limited training, but he was hardly legendary. And yet, there was something to Renarin's words, something that made them difficult to dismiss idly. Perhaps it had been that odd look in his eyes, one that had been strange even for Renarin. Or perhaps it had been the combined effect of his eerie, maddened scribblings and his foreboding words. And then there was her own memory, her longings. She had felt something when she'd touched the Oathgate opals. She had difficulty remembering specifics, but there had been something there, something marvelous, and something she had an amorphous longing to feel again, even if she couldn't quite recall the experience. She did have power over the gates. That much could not be disputed. What happened 17 years ago? Renarin's whispered words returned to her. She tried to dismiss them as the ramblings of a strange mind, but she couldn't. Not quite. And that frustrated her even more.
There was something very odd about the sensation of summoning and dismissing a shard blade. Marin couldn't quite define it, even after 10 sets of repetitions. When he called the blade, there was an anticipation within, like a held breath. His heartbeats seemed to thump more loudly as the summoning progressed. And then the blade formed, falling into his waiting grip, never taking him by surprise or catching him off balance. The dismissal was like a puffed breath. There was no anticipation, no waiting for heartbeats, it simply happened. Yet in that brief moment when the blade vanished, Marin felt a sharp sense of familiarity. That fraction of a heartbeat, gone before he could do more than acknowledge it, gave him pause, causing him to summon and dismiss the blade repeatedly. He felt like he had dismissed a blade some time before, though that was impossible. He hadn't bonded his blade until earlier that very morning. His 100 days, extended slightly by time spent separated from the blade, finally up. That sensation, it was so familiar. He almost reached out his hand to summon the blade again. He felt that if he could try just a few more times, he would be able to pinpoint where he had felt that dismissing sensation before. He caught himself, however, lowering his hand. He didn't look at Lady Shinri, but he didn't have to look to know that her eyes were on him, studying him, understanding him. He didn't want to meet those eyes, for he knew his own guilt would show. Why had he let Renarin persuade him to bring the girl? If they hadn't kidnapped her, she would be safe. There was no reason for her to be with them, held in yet another cell, which was exactly what it was, despite their guards' assurances that they were only being detained for their own protection. At least Merrin had his jade. He looked down at the bracelet around his wrist. He had managed to pry the thin metal backing off of the bracelet, and then pushed down the stones so that they touched his skin when he put on the piece of jewelry. He wore it always, despite its feminine designs, and the world around him wiggled with motion invisible to everyone else. He also had his blade. Ironically, his possession of the weapon was what kept him from trying to break free from the captivity. Leaving a shardbearer with his blade was a very dangerous move, one that indicated a hesitance. Perhaps their captors weren't sure what to do with Merrin and the others. Perhaps there was still a chance that he would be set free. That would be for the best. Merrin didn't want to try and fight his way to freedom. He bore these people no anger. From what he understood, they were a conquered people themselves. Unfortunately, if they held him much longer, he would have little choice. He had to get back to Alethkar so he could help Lord Dalinar. The room's guards obviously understood the precarious nature of the captivity. If Merrin did decide to try and escape, he could slaughter 10 sets of men before he was subdued and his blade taken, if indeed he was subdued. The soldiers acted with respect and not a little nervousness. None of them wanted to be the man who sparked a conflict. They pretended that the delay wasn't really incarceration, and for the moment, Merrin pretended the same. But for how much longer? So far, Renarin seemed contented to wait, so Merrin did likewise. Yet how long could they waste? Alethkar was under attack, and Lord Dalinar had undoubtedly gone to war. Merrin's place was at his lord's side. And yet he had allowed Renarin to persuade him to come to Lochinron, a path that took him away from his lord. Had it been cowardice that had driven Merrin to accept Renarin's suggestion? Did he fear facing Dalinar and receiving punishment for riding to Crossguard? The internal accusations were difficult to ignore, and the guilt only made him more fidgety. When will we go? Merrin thought with increasing frustration, shooting a glance at Renarin. Renarin sat with complete disconcern. Merrin had to assume that his friend knew something or had guessed something about their predicament. Renarin would know best. He had far more experience with political matters than Merrin. Merrin sighed, standing and walking over to the window. The ocean below held 10 sets of ships, even more than the day before. Several more vessels were visible in the distance, slowly approaching the city. The docks were infested with scrambling workers. "What are they all doing here?" Merrin wondered. "The ships?" Renarin asked from his bench beside the window. "That's the Lochinron fleet. It's obviously gathering at King Arvin's command." "Now?" Merrin asked. "Isn't it too late? Arvin has already attacked Alethkar." "It does seem a bit tardy," Renarin agreed. "I don't know why they haven't left already." "He didn't expect to leave Rhal Arum so early," Shinri mumbled from the other side of the room. "He planned to stay a few more weeks until the naval forces were in place." "Why?" Renarin asked curiously. "What made him leave early?" "Lady Yasna," Shinri said. "She and some others escaped the city and Arvin feared that she might expose him. So he left early, hoping to attack King Elokar's forces before they were warned of the danger." Marin frowned, scanning the collected fleet. He knew little about navies. The first time he had seen the ocean had been when the Aleth armies marched past the point of the Sea of Chomar on their way to Prala. "What good will a navy do?" he asked. "I mean, the fighting will take place inland, won't it?" "Yes," Renarin said, standing and leaning against the windowsill beside him. "However, the Lochan Run troops their ships hold are equally as important as the vessels themselves. There are at least 4 10-set transports out there. They could land an army large enough to provide serious flanking danger. Then, once the troops are offloaded, the ships themselves can sail the coast and make certain Alethkar doesn't receive any support from Aleth Pralir or Thelena. Help will have to land on the other side of the Sea of Chomar, which will create a delay of at least 2 months." Marin's frown deepened. He glanced at Renarin, speaking in a lower voice.
"Renarin, we can't delay any longer. We have to get this information to Lord Dalinar."
"I agree," Renarin said cheerily. "Have you decided to try and escape, then?"
"What do you think?"
Renarin shrugged.
"It's up to you. You're the ranking nobleman. That means you're in charge."
Marin froze.
"What?"
he hissed, shooting a glance back at Shinri. He kept his voice low so she couldn't listen in with her judgmental ears.
"Renarin, I'm not in charge, you are." "I'm not a shardbearer," he said. "You outrank me."
"So?"
"So people won't listen to me," Renarin said. "I have a reputation even this far south. Everyone knows my father, and they know me by association. I'm no leader of men. I don't pay enough attention to them, and I can't speak in the ways that inspire loyalty. I'm no warrior, Marin." "No, you're in charge. When you decide to leave this cell, we will go."
Marin shook his head.
"Renarin, I can't. I—"
He trailed off, trying to gauge his own emotions. How could he explain the guilt he had felt while imprisoned in Rel Arum? The guilt he still felt.
"I don't want to decide," Marin finally said. "I don't know what I'm doing, Renarin. I thought I did. I thought I was living in a story, that I was some kind of hero, like in the ballads. But heroes don't betray their lords and don't let their friends ride to battle alone. Don't let them die alone."
"Leadership isn't about choosing right all the time, Marin," Renarin replied quietly. "It's about accepting consequences. Surely Bajardin's words taught you that much. How many recitations of the Way of Kings did you listen to?"
"A lot," Marin said. "But I found the book kind of boring."
Renarin smiled.
"It is. But it's true anyway."
Marin sighed, then he glanced at Renarin.
"Who are you to tell me about responsibility? You're trying to avoid making decisions too."
"I'm not a shardbearer," Renarin said, "nor am I a windrunner."
Marin paused. Windrunner. He wasn't certain how to handle that comment. The story spoke of windrunners and the other Apellian, stone wards, dustbringers, and the others, with a tone reserved for the greatest of heroes. Marin didn't belong in their midst, especially after what he had let happen to Arador.
"I don't know, Renarin," he said sickly. "It's more than just making bad decisions. I still don't know what is right. Should I have gone with Arador at first? Maybe he would still be alive. Should I have remained firm and stayed behind? If I had, then I would be at Lord Dalinar's side defending Alethkar instead of sitting in a cell far to the south. I wavered in between, and I still don't know which decision would have been right."
"There was a third decision," Renarin said. "The one you did make. Leaving afterward, trying to find a way to bring Arador back with you. If you hadn't made that decision, then we wouldn't have been able to help Lady Shinri."
"Help her?" Marin asked. "Renarin, we kidnapped her."
Renarin shrugged.
"This was the right place to come, Marin. Lochan Run was the best choice of many."
"But why?"
Renarin shrugged.
"The Almighty curse me if I know."
Marin closed his eyes, leaning against the windowsill and feeling the breeze from without. It was colder here in the south, but pleasantly so.
"Marin," Renarin said encouragingly, "you're doing fine. It's natural to think of past decisions. That will help you understand how to choose better in the future. However, don't let your worries make you useless in the present, especially if there are current decisions you need to be making.
Like what? Marin asked. Like whether or not I should take my blade and cut down those poor men who have been assigned to guard us?
That's one decision you could make, Renarin said. However, I think there's something more important you need to consider. I think perhaps it's time to ask yourself if you really want to be a nobleman.
Do you?
Marin stood quietly for a moment.
I don't know, he said. It seems like a ridiculous question, doesn't it?
Who wouldn't want to be a shard-bearer? But...
Being a lord isn't about carrying a blade, Renarin said, though I don't think I understood that until I lost my own. It can't just be about the sword, Marin. Otherwise any fool who managed to get a blade would automatically become a good leader. No, there has to be more. In the end, I think it's all about decisions. A spearman doesn't have to make them. He can wait until he's told what to do. A lord has to be willing to decide, and not just for himself, but for others as well.
Marin nodded quietly.
You were given a blade, Renarin said, but I don't think you ever really decided to be a shardbearer. It's more than loyalty. It's more than doing what Lord Dalinar tells you. It's about doing what you think is best, even if there isn't anyone else there to give commands.
There was an unspoken suggestion in those words. Decide now, what will it be, lord or citizen? Ever since that first day on the battlefield, Marin had been trying to figure out what his place was. No one seemed to be able to tell him exactly what he should be doing, and it didn't appear that anyone was going to.
Renarin, he said slowly, still leaning on the sill and looking out the window, do you think the reason we came here might have something to do with those ships?
Renarin turned speculatively.
I wondered that myself, he said. Perhaps. Knowledge of the fleet's numbers and position would certainly be valuable information for the Aleth forces to receive.
And if the ships never left at all? Marin asked. Renarin paused for a second, then he shrugged.
That would be even better, obviously.
Marin nodded, standing. All right then, let's go. The smoke appeared in his hand almost without conscious summoning. 10 heartbeats, the blade fell into his fingers as he crossed the room toward the door. Lady Shinri stood.
What are you doing? She demanded.
Marin ignored her.
Who rules Lochinron on King Avon's behalf?
He asked Renarin, pausing before the door to their rooms.
A council of regents, Renarin said. 3 men, each one representing one of the Lochinron houses who allied with Vaidenar during the invasion.
Traitors, then. Marin surmised. Renarin nodded.
They are not well loved by the Lochinron people.
Marin nodded.
Marin? What are you planning?
Shinri asked again, her voice apprehensive. Their door was locked, of course. Marin raised his blade, then with 3 strikes, cut it off its hinges and bolt. He kicked it, and the oaken portal fell outward, crashing to the stones outside with a single vibrant crack. A guard stood on either side of the doorway, their terrified yet unsurprised expressions proving that they had expected Marin's attack to come eventually. They drew their weapons with nervous hands, and Marin could see a 3rd man dashing down the hillside toward the center of town. One of the soldiers raised his sword threateningly. Marin sheared it in half.
Take me to the Council of Regents, Marin said. I need to speak with them.
The soldier stared back with a mixture of defiance and worry, catching Marin's eyes. The move was obvious enough that Marin wasn't surprised when the 2nd man tried to attack him from the side. A swipe of the shard blade divided that man's blade from its hilt as well. Marin raised his blade toward the 1st man's chest. He was an older soldier, graying, probably chosen for guard duty because of his age.
I won't take you,
the man said in thickly accented Aleth. Marin paused. Maybe the man's age wasn't the only reason he had been given the duty. Marin eyed the 2nd man, who looked equally resolute.
They've had plenty of time to consider this moment. These men have been ready to die for 3 days.
Oh, this is foolishness, Lady Shinri snapped from behind. I know the way.
Stop terrorizing Calden and Chanmed.
Marin paused, lowering his blade as Shinri pushed past him.
How do you know their names?
She gave him a flat look, weakening his newfound resolve.
They have been bringing our meals for the last 3 days, Marin. One doesn't have to be all that observant to listen when men speak to one another.
Marin blushed as Shinri started down the hill, walking in the same direction as the departed soldier. Marin and Renarin followed behind, as did the two unarmed and slightly confused soldiers. Marin kept a wary eye behind as they walked. Renarin, however, still looked more thoughtful than worried.
Do you think this is too drastic? Marin asked in a low voice as they walked.
Renarin shrugged.
We couldn't wait forever, and this is certainly the most direct way to free ourselves. I am a bit curious to see how you intend to get us out of the city alive, though.
The city sloped down toward the ocean. The valley might have been called a lake, but it was a bit too broad. A wide riverbed ran through the center of the city, its dry banks hinting that the river was usually far thicker than the current summer trickle. The people Marin passed were Kanaran, but their clothing felt oddly informal. Almost more like bed clothing than formal outfits. They showed far too much skin on both sexes, and there was something else very odd. It took Marin a moment to realize what it was. No cloaks. None of the people wore cloaks. This was almost strange enough to make him pause in place. He slowed, studying the street-goers, who in turn watched his hustling pace with curious expressions. It was true. Not a one of them wore a cloak. In Alethkar, even the poorest of peasants owned a cloak. A starving man would sell his shoes before he sold his cloak. Yet here, no one seemed to bother with the garment. The absence only added to the sense of indecency. Without cloaks, the people seemed almost naked. Marin blushed, hurrying forward, his masculine stride allowing him to quickly catch Shinri, who, despite her hurry, maintained a graceful, proper stride.
Where?
Marin asked, glancing backward. Only one of the guards was still tailing them. The other had disappeared somewhere, likely to seek reinforcements.
Not far, Shinri said. That building ahead.
The structure in question was a massive golden dome. As they approached, Marin could see signs of decay. It wasn't that the building was in poor maintenance. The doors still hung firmly, and the stone was in good repair. However, what had once obviously been intricate reliefs had been allowed to fall prey to crumb buildup, the once delicate features melding together beneath a uniform stone patina. Where there once might have been awakened embossings, there was now simple whitewashed stone. A group of about 10 soldiers was gathering near the entrance. Marin recognized one member of the group as the guard who had fled. Oddly, none of the men were shardbearers, a fact both comforting and disturbing. He could probably take all 10 by himself, though it would be a close fight. Without shardplate, a group of 10 trained soldiers was large enough to be of appreciable danger. Marin's blade still rested in his hand. Shinri paused, then glanced apprehensively toward Marin as he strode past her to face the soldiers. Only 2 of the men were noblemen, but the 8 spearmen could prove even more deadly, their spears affording them longer reach. Marin stood for a moment, listening to his opponents shift uncomfortably beneath his gaze.
What now? He asked himself. Fight my way in? Marin?
Renarin said quietly, stepping up beside him.
These men aren't our enemies.
They kept us captive, Marin replied.
And didn't turn us over to Vaidnar, Renarin said.
I need to speak with the Council of Regents, Marin said, eyeing the soldiers.
He could see the nervous breaths puffing from their lips.
They'll never let a hostile shardbearer in to see their rulers, Renarin said. This is a captured nation.
No Lochanron warrior is allowed a shardblade of his own.
If they let you in, you could slaughter all 3 regents and their guards before anyone could stop you.
Marin gritted his teeth. It was a good argument, of course. It was hard to trust a man while he proverbially held a shardblade at your neck. But the alternative was to... Marin looked down at his blade.
It can't just be about the sword.
Marin stepped forward, causing a wrinkle of apprehension in the soldiers, then rammed his blade into the ground.
You,
he said, pointing at their former prison guard. He knew the man spoke Alice.
If I let you confiscate my blade for the duration of the meeting, will you take me in to see the regents?
The man started. He blinked a few times.
Excuse me?
He asked, as if uncertain that he had interpreted Marin's words correctly. Marin repeated his request. The guard's confusion became shock, and he slowly turned to his companions and said something in a language Marin didn't understand.
That isn't exactly what I thought you would do, Renarin noted. Do you have any idea how unorthodox a move it is to let a stranger hold your blade?
Marin glanced at his weapon. Gone from his fingers only a few moments, he already felt an itching desire to grab it back and dismiss it. When he had thought it gone, taken from him, the sense of despair had been so painful that he didn't even want to consider what would happen if he lost it again. He hadn't even named the blade yet. He was supposed to do that when the bonding completed, but he hadn't been able to determine a suitable title. He'd wanted to ask Lord Dalinar for advice.
Assuming he lets me keep it, Marin thought sourly. Perhaps it was better to lose the blade now to treachery. No, he immediately thought. Better not to lose it at all.
The soldier reached forward with a timid hand, picking up the blade uncertainly, as if waiting for a trap. He hefted the weapon, and Marin recalled his own first moments holding a shard blade. Hopefully this man wouldn't decide to test the blade's sharpness on Marin, as Marin had once done with the rock outside his healer's tent.
Come with me, the soldier said, nodding to his companions.
The group split, giving them passage into the building. Marin stepped forward, then glanced back toward Shinri and Renarin. Renarin looked unperturbed, an expression that was growing increasingly common to his features. Shinri, however, looked thoughtful, which surprised Marin.
No words of disdain about my foolish loss of a shard blade? He asked as they stepped into the building.
Shinri eyed him, the look somehow conveying that she was annoyed he would think such of her.
Is a shard blade worth the deaths of 10 innocent men? She asked. Is it worth the death of even one? I'm surprised to admit that you might have done the right thing, Marin Kolin.
Her praise gave him a reflexive burst of confidence as he entered the dome's central hallway. Here, too, he noticed signs of modest decoration. The carpets were monochrome, rather than woven with designs like those in Rael Arum. The glyph-ward tapestries on the walls were simple and relatively unadorned. The atmosphere of the hallway was utilitarian. Or was there perhaps something deeper? Was the lack of ornamentation an order from the Vaden conquerors, or was it an unconscious symbol of the Lochinron people's beaten-down temperament? If the first were true, Marin's task might be easier than he thought. However, if the people really were so subservient that they intentionally decorated with plainness in order to placate their foreign masters. A throne room lay beyond a set of double doors at the end of the hallway. It unexpectedly contained an actual throne, and a lavish one at that. Marin quickly realized, however, that this was another symbol of the nation's conquered nature. The throne sat on a dais and was unoccupied. Three simpler chairs sat below. The regents were required to rule beneath the empty throne, a likely representation of the absent Vaden king. Marin stepped into the room, soldiers and companions crowding into the chamber behind him. The three regents were aging men, all of about the same age, perhaps in their sixth decade. They wore squared Vaden beards, though few of the men Marin had seen on the streets wore any facial hair. Their clothing was of a Vaden cut, militaristic, form-fitted, and non-revealing. All three wore cloaks.
"You should have stayed where you were put, young man," the center regent said, leaning forward in his pseudo-throne.
He was the thinnest of the three. His skin hung on him in folds, giving a drooping kind of moroseness to his features. He was surprisingly good at the Aleth tongue.
"In your prison?" Marin asked.
"It was for your protection," the man replied. "There are a lot of Vaden soldiers in Nanar. The city is not a safe place for Aleth noblemen, especially ones of your affiliation."
Marin paused.
"You know who I am?"
The rightmost regent smiled.
"Do you know when a Kanaran peasant last earned himself a shard blade, Marin Kolin?"
the plump man asked.
"Not exactly," Marin admitted.
"Well, it didn't happen during my lifetime, I will say that much,"
the fatter regent explained, leaning back in his throne. That long? Marin thought with shock. He had realized the event happened rarely, but once in 50 years?
"His identity is no longer important," the final regent suddenly snapped in a terse tone. "I say it's about time we interrogated him. Tell us, boy, what did you do to our Oath Gate?"
"What do you mean?" Marin asked.
"The Oath Gate no longer seems to work, young man," the middle regent explained. "We've been waiting for our Lord King to send men through the Oath Gate looking for you, but none came. Finally, we had one of our awakeners try and open the gate from our end. He worked for some time, but nothing happened. He says something is wrong. The opal doesn't respond to his touch."
Marin barely kept himself from glancing back at Shinri. What had the girl done? Why hadn't she told them?
"I don't know what is wrong with your Oath Gate," Marin said truthfully. "I do find it curious, however, that you were waiting for the Vadens to come for us. You implied that I should have stayed in my prison so that the Vaden soldiers wouldn't see me. Yet you were just planning to hand me over to them anyway."
The hefty regent chuckled.
"We do as our king commands," he said. "As of yet, he hadn't commanded, which left us a little confused at what to do with you."
"That's unimportant now," said the snappish regent. "Every soldier in town must have seen that blue cloak flapping on the boy's way here. When the officers discover we have a Kolin in the city, and that we've been keeping him hidden for several days—"
The central regent raised a tired hand, stilling his companion.
"We will do as we must. They cannot take too harsh an action against us, not without orders from the Lord King."
Marin should have felt far more intimidated. These were aged lords, the leaders of a nation. A conquered nation, true, but they were still the most powerful men of their race. And yet he found very little anxiety within. Instead he felt pity. Pity and a bit of anger. Where was the honor in these men? They seemed more tired and crotchety than they did intimidating. There was an uncertainty in their voices, a tone that Marin recognized. Some of the soldiers in his 10 squad had borne that same tone, the ones who cringed whenever a lord spoke, the men who had been trained or employed by harsh masters.
"Do not judge us, young Kolin," the central regent said, studying Marin's face.
He was no aged gaffer, not yet, but he sat with his back bent as if by age. He regarded Marin with eyes that tried to hide the guilt within.
"Your counsel comes too late," Marin said. "I judged you the moment I heard that only you three, out of all the houses of Lochinron, had chosen to side with your invaders when the conquerors came 30 years before. I judged you to be cowards and traitors. Dare you call my judgment hasty?"
The central regent actually cringed before the accusation.
"You don't know what kind of situation we were in," spat the man on the left. "All three Vaden houses invaded jointly. We didn't have the men to resist that kind of attack. Would you have had us die instead?"
"Instead of this?"
Marin asked, nodding toward the three men and their lowly thrones.
"Yes. I think I would have rather died had I been you."
"There's from a peasant," the regent said back.
"A citizen has pride," Marin said. "He has a tradition.
He can be proud of the work he does and the service he performs for a lord he trusts, a lord who cares for his welfare. If his lord betrays this trust, the peasant still has solemn right of movement granted him by the way of kings. He can protest his lord's indecency by moving to another village, taking his family's numbers from that lord's census and giving them to a more honorable ruler.
A pleasant sentiment, the portly regent said. But it is hardly practical to move an entire kingdom, lad. The way of kings doesn't grant protection if the kings themselves ignore it. Your peasant would continue to serve the dishonorable master if swords were presented to threaten his children.
Send for Lord Evanar, the leftmost regent ordered, pointing toward a soldier. Tell him we have a gift for him at the regent's dome.
The soldier nodded, but glanced at the central regent for confirmation. The haggard man began to nod.
Wait, Marin said. I came here for a purpose. I wish to ask a favor of you.
The leftmost regent snorted.
And that is?
Marin continued to look at the center man. I want you to detain your fleet, he said. Don't send it to Alethkar. Delay it, so that King Ovan doesn't receive the troops in time to do him any good. The room fell silent. Then several men chuckled, including the two outer regents.
You'd sooner persuade the winds to stop blowing, the rightmost regent noted. There are Vaden officers on every one of those ships.
How many officers? Marin asked. A couple per ship? And how many of your own soldiers walk the decks? 10 sets.
What you say just now wouldn't be delaying our ships, the leftmost regent laughed. It would be open war. We can't kill Vaden officers. Ovin's armies would return to destroy us. Besides, there are 5 shard-bearers overseeing the loading of those ships. You expect us to fight them, too?
You could defeat them, Marin challenged. Shard-bearers can be killed by common men. Do I need to remind you of how I got my own blade?
Perhaps, the portly man said. But what of the repercussions? What about when Vaidenil comes back? Should we sacrifice our own people to protect yours?
You should do something, Marin said. Even if King Ovan does return, he will be weakened. His armies will have fought Alethkar. If he has lost, then his morale will be low. If he has won, then he will have to leave a force in the north to occupy. You could resist. How can you sit here dying before me, then claim to be worried of the death Vaidenar will bring upon you? Now is the time when your enemies will be weak. If your leaders are unjust, then the Almighty gives you the right to throw them off. Even peasants know that.
The room fell still. The central regent didn't move, didn't even seem to breathe for a long moment. Then he slumped a little further in his throne.
I'm sorry, young Colin, the regent said, but our enemies are not weak. The 3 houses are unified, and I have heard news of our new king. This is not a man to disobey. Besides, your suggestion is impossible. Perhaps it is easy for you to consider the slaying of 5 shard-bearers, but you are a man who has experienced both privilege and fortune. We have neither. Our men have never seen a shard blade except in the hands of our oppressors. They have seen their comrades cut down for speaking out of place. To them, the Vaden lords are almost as the heralds themselves. We cannot resist them.
The man raised a weary arm, motioning for the messenger to continue on his duty. Marin closed his eyes, groaning slightly to himself. He had been wrong. This wasn't simply an oppressed people, it was an enslaved people. He had hoped that maybe they would be willing to strike back, but it had been a flawed hope from the start. After all, weren't these the very men who had bowed before Vaidenar years before? No, they wouldn't fight. Renarin had said that nobility wasn't about the shard blade, and in a way he was right. But these people couldn't see anything but the blade. Marin paused. Anything but the blade. There wasn't time to think.
Stop!
Merrin said, opening his eyes and turning toward the messenger, hand upraised. The man paused just outside the throne room doors. Merrin turned to the regents. "And what if I defeat them for you?"
"Them?"
the portly regent asked. "Your 5 Vaden shardbearers. If I duel them and win, you won't have to fear their blades anymore. Will you take command of your ships, then? Delay them as I have asked?"
"You're mad," said the leftmost regent. "One man against 5? You don't even have plate. By the winds, you haven't even been a shardbearer for 30 years.
"Well?" Merrin asked, ignoring the man, staring directly at the center regent. The man wouldn't meet his eyes.
"Fight," Merrin pled. "You have a chance now. Isn't that what you told yourself 30 years ago? That you would just appear to serve the Vadens, but wouldn't give them your heart? You thought you would wait for a better time to fight, a time when they weren't so strong."
The man looked up, and Merrin could see that he had guessed correctly. Suddenly, the regent's depressed figure made sense. He was worse than a traitor. He was a man who had lied to himself, but seen through that lie. A coward.
"They will kill you," the regent warned. "These men are all fine duelists. I have seen them spar."
"Better they kill me than I starve in a dungeon somewhere," Merrin said with as much bravado as he could muster.
Suddenly his decision was beginning to seem a bit brash. The regents said nothing.
"That's how they deal with things they don't want to face. They avoid them, lock them up in a prison above town, refuse to look at them."
"Fine," Merrin said before his resolve could weaken any further. "I'm going to the docks. I assume that's where these shardbearers are?"
No one contradicted him, so he nodded, turning. He walked up to the man who still held his blade.
"This will be a lot easier if you return that to me," he said. "Otherwise, I'll have to kill the first one with my knife."
The soldier glanced at his regent, but received no support. Finally, he turned back to Merrin. Then, taking a deep breath, he held up the blade with a reverent touch.
"Good luck, my lord," he said.
Merrin accepted the sword back, the room's air curling around his arm in a playful spiral, and strode out the way he had come.